With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is KJ Live.
Yeah!
With Chris Johnson. And Chris is having conversations with influencers in the sports world and entertainment industry.
Hey, hey!
Now here's Chris Johnson.
You're now tuned in to KJ Live. Today's guest on the show is a former UCLA Bruin who was named first team All-Pac-10 in 2005. He was drafted in the second round with the number 54 pick by the New York Knicks and spent 13 seasons or something like that playing overseas as a bona fide pro. One of my favorite dudes, Dijon. Welcome to KJ Live. What's up, boy?
Thank you, man. Appreciate that, man. And you said my name actually right to end it off, man. Dijon, that's, you know, it's Dijon. That D gets dragged out a lot lately, but, you know, it's Dijon. But appreciate the love. Appreciate the welcome. Welcome to be here, man.
No doubt, man. No doubt, man. I've had a lot of cats on the show since I started doing this. A lot of our UCLA brothers as well. And we kind of dive into the background of the person, of, you know, to find out the journey that made the man who they are. I want to educate our audience on you and sort of just start at your childhood and where you're from. What neighborhood you grew up in? Like, where were you born at?
I grew up in Inglewood. Spent some time growing up with my great grandmother. She stayed off of 8th Ave and Vernon.
Okay.
My mom and they kind of went to Crenshaw, and then they moved out to Pasadena area and graduated from Muir. And then we came back down to the Crenshaw, to the Inglewood area. And that's kind of where I grew up. My mom and dad, they worked at Northrop and Grumman. At the time, it was TRW, and then it went to Northrop and Grumman. So that's how I was able to get the permit and found my way into Redondo Beach in the high school area. But yeah, grew up in the L.A. area, Inglewood.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot of us, bro. Like a lot of us. What a lot of people don't realize about the L.A. area is South Central, Inglewood, Watts, all that's like 10, 15 minutes from each other. Inglewood, South Central is really close. It's like you hit a, you go up, you know, Hyde Park, hit a couple back streets, and you right over, you know, in the thick of things. And you might be in the 60s hood over here, and then you hit the cut. You over here in the blood hood. Like, damn, what the hell is going on? Was there anything as far as the gang activity? And I know you're a little younger than I am, because the gang stuff was real huge for us when we were growing up. Was the gang or the streets, was there any allure to that when you were coming up in Inglewood?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it didn't go nowhere. I mean, it was always around growing up. You know, you just have vivid memories. Even we stayed on Crenshaw at the time, and it's during the riots, you know, it's growing up during that time. And it's funky around there. And I mean, gangs didn't go nowhere. You always grew up in it. And growing up in L.A., it becomes second nature, really. I mean, you numb to it. You see it. You know where to go, where not to go. But, yeah, it's always around. And now it's down the street, like you said.
When did Hoop start to become something that you figured out you wanted to do seriously?
That's crazy, because I don't really have that traditional, like, I grew up with the ball, or, you know, I was always playing basketball. That wasn't necessarily me. Yeah, I was always playing basketball at schools and parks and stuff, but my family wasn't really an athletic family. I maybe had an uncle that played some baseball, but I was really the first generation as far as, you know, taking basketball or sports to another level. So that background wasn't there. Everything was green for me, and I was just learning on the fly type of things. So it was just playing at school, and probably about the sixth grade, fifth grade, you know, you got your peers or your friends saying, we in this league, and why are you not playing? And why am I not playing, you know? And at that time, you know, my mom was – single parents, she ain't had time to do all that, you know, so it was just at the school and that's it. But, you know, once my stepdad came along, It was way more time for that. You know, he was able to take me to everything and really get involved and dive into it and really get a liking to it.
So, man, how old were you when your stepfather came into the picture?
Ah, man, he was there from the beginning.
So as long as you can remember, what school?
Yeah,
what elementary school or what like park? Like, I was talking to Stace Bozeman, and I know you know who Stace is, and he was talking about how he came up at Jesse Owens, or it was called Sportsman's Park, and then he was at St. Andrews and hooping with all yeah. What park did you come up at?
So that's crazy. Like, it's like I don't have that story to where I was okay. always out like that, you know? Yeah. Like, basketball, it came alike, and it was all, like, natural. But, you know, I would go to the park. I'd go to Holly Park down the street. That's
okay. Yeah, that's – yeah, Holly so Park. Down, all right.
You know, band ass go to Holly Park.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you wasn't really allowed to go to Raleigh, so it was like, we'll just stop at Holly Park. So I wasn't going to Raleigh Park in Gardena. It was always Holly. Maybe Cimarron Park, because my uncle stayed like literally like right around there. So I was mm-hmm. in that area.
Yeah. When, at what point or how old were you when you kind of knew that you were better than dude when you played against him? Like, when did it sink into you? For me, like, I started to get that bug at like 14, 15 years old. I started, you know, giving dudes numbers and feeling good about myself. How old were you? What age was that?
Oh, man. It probably about ninth grade, you know, I started to really get on that circuit, that real circuit where the killers is at, you know. Mm-hmm. So ninth grade, I'm playing with Thad, with Sports Express. They brought me on.
Who's on your team? Who's on your team?
I got guys like Brandon Heath. We got Chad Bell.
Oh, yeah.
We had Chuck Hayes, my guy Modesto.
He brought big lefty? Yeah, Chuck.
Yeah, we had a mob, Marcus Williams.
Wait, which Marcus lefty?
Lefty Crenshaw, Craig Smith.
Craig? Y'all had a squad, dog.
Yeah,
we had a squad, man.
We had a squad. It was fun. So around that time, you start measuring yourself against this type of competition and got against guys that have, you know, grew up in the gym, you know, and it's like, all right, I could hang, you know, I'm still fresh, still learning, like, oh, these guys are flying around here. But I adjusted quick, learned on the fly, like I said.
Who did you kind of hold yourself to, like, the standard of that type of guy? Like, when we were coming up in my era, it was like Charles O'Bannon, Chuck. It was like everybody was, you know, trying to rock with Chuck because Chuck was the man. Was there who in your era was that kind of like that guy?
Man, that's a good question. Like, I was a weird one, man. Like, it's like basketball was just like, I just like basketball. Like you said, ninth grade year, like that motivation starts coming. I went to high school with like a guy named Marcus Moore. He was our point guard, Andrew Zahn. Yeah. These guys were at the time, they were getting letters. You see them walking across the lunch quad with letters, Nike shoes, everything. I'm like, man, I need all of that. Like, how do I get to that level? Like, how do I need all of that. I need them letters. I need all of that. So to answer the question, like, for somebody, me looking at somebody growing up, like, I really didn't – basketball was just basketball to me. I'm just hooping. Like, it's just fun.
Where did you, like, find or draw upon for your competitive spirit, like the competitive side of things? Because, you know, as hoopers, man, we're not just going to let people bust our ass. And I know you might not have been at the park, but I'm sure when you did go to the park, you was trying to win. Where did you get that competitive spirit from that made you elite?
That's my mom and my dad, really. I mean, it's once you start something, you're going to do it at your best and give it your best. And it's that's where that competitiveness come in. And it's just the streets. You know, I've always played and had friends that were older than me. You know, that was kind of my – I never really played with people my age. It was always hanging out with people older than me. So I'll go around the corner with my friend Troy, and he was older than me. He had handles. He kind of baptized me. It was just like, dang, I need to step it up a little bit. So it was always with my older friends, being around them and kind of learning the ropes like that.
That's the best way, man. Because I kind of like you, bro. I didn't grow up in the gym as all them dudes that we ended up playing with either.
Yeah.
Like, you know how everybody knew each other when they was younger? No, I came in late, 15, 16. They was calling me the fat boy with the curly top, the fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know what I'm saying? But what I had was a lot of experience playing against my dad one-on-one, bro.
Yeah.
So imagine, so when you say you had your cousin or the homie around the corner that was beating up on you, my dad was doing the same thing. He was trying to make a comeback to the league. So he using me as the one-on-one. Like, what's up with your ones? I got to guard him. I got to do all that when I'm 14 and 15. And so the level of physicality he introduced me to, it just made it so that when I played against dudes my age, I just was not tripping on nobody. Yeah. And that's why that's where that playing against older dudes thing comes in. Sometimes you ain't got to play on the circuit.
Yeah.
As long as you're getting that good work, and it sounds like you got it.
I was always finding some good bump. I mean,
So your recruitment. You had Redondo Union. Were you playing? Who was there? Reggie? No, Reggie Morris wasn't there.
No, it was Jim Nielsen.
Okay, Jim Nielsen was there. I remember Andrew Zahn from Hoop Masters days. He played with Josiah or his brother. I forgot which one it was. He had a brother, right?
It was Andrew.
It was a couple of them, but anyway.
Yeah.
Your recruitment. So you got a nice crew. You kind of, getting off a little bit. Who are some of the schools that were looking at you early on that kind of got you excited?
I had this weird like factuation with Syracuse. Syracuse just had that notoriety at the time, in the 90s and, North Carolina. So I was like, I got to go to Syracuse. I like the orange. I like the jerseys. Jerseys were sweet, And then once I started to get more deeper into basketball, I'm like, snow. Like, I'm from LA. Like, snow. Like, I'm not going there. Like, nah.
You fell off the snow?
Like, nah. Like, because I didn't really go nowhere. I didn't really travel nowhere. Like, basketball took me everywhere. Like, if it wasn't for basketball, I probably wouldn't have traveled. I probably would have been, somebody from LA that's never been nowhere, anywhere. So.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
So Syracuse,
so senior year came down to UConn, Arizona, and UCLA, my top three schools.
Okay, okay.
Jim Calhoun came to my house to home visit. Loved him. Loved UConn.
Hey,
LA. It's East Coast. I say, I ain't really been nowhere. And then at that time, it's like, it's not for me,
bruh.
I'm Ben Gordon. I said, damn. All right. Cool. So Arizona, I go to my trip on Arizona. Loved it. Richard Jefferson's my host. End up hanging out with Gilbert probably the whole time.
Hey, what was your visit like? You and RJ, y'all two light skins. What was y'all getting off in Arizona, dog? I can't imagine what was
listen,
going
man,
on.
Listen, man, RJ's been the same. He's been the same. He's been the same guy as you see him now, man. He's the same guy.
I rock with RJ.
He's just RJ from Phoenix.
I mess with RJ, dog. I like RJ.
He's RJ from Phoenix down the street, just like, hey, this is Tucson, this is Arizona trying to show me the way. And then, you come across Gil, who's Gilbert, the same Gilbert.
Yeah.
You're like, come over here with me, young fella. I'm going to show you the ropes. So ended up hanging out with Gilbert more than Richard, but it was fun. I had a really good time, really good trip. Andrew, who I played with, was a freshman going into his freshman year at that time, so I had a little comfort there from my high school teammate. It just wasn't LA. It just wasn't LA. Lute Olson was amazing. Like, if they was in LA, I probably would have signed there, but it just wasn't LA.
What was it about? Was it a thing you didn't want to leave home, man? You're so comfortable just in your surroundings in LA that leaving LA just kind of not frightened you, but it kind of gave you a little pause, kind of like, man, I ain't trying to dip from the city. Is that how it went down for you?
A little bit. A little bit, but I mean, you grew up in LA and you see the prestige that UCLA got, and you see the banners and everything. I mean, that spoke for itself. And you got Lab coming in and, you know, talking and seeing the family and being at every game and, you know, being Lab. I mean, it was an easy sell for me. It was easy.
Yeah. Nah, when back in that era of Lab, man, when you say being Lab, Steve Lavin, who was just named the new head coach at University of San Diego.
Yeah, congrats to that, yeah.
And who we both played for, we can both testify to that this guy is one of a kind. He's one of the probably, I know, in my opinion, just as far as ability to speak and work a room and, you know, sell somebody's mom on trusting that person with their child for the next 4 years. Like, please, it doesn't get too much better than that. I say Lav, Calipari, them type of dudes, man. Like, those dudes that come from the same cloth. So you got Lav. So Lav got you. Who was your other guys that came in with you as freshmen?
Came in with another. Actually, I wouldn't say they were all Los Angeles natives, man. Cedric Bozeman. And Andre Patterson.
Jerry.
That was our crew right there.
Yeah, that was a nice crew, man. That was a nice crew. Long. You guys were long, very athletic. One thing that could be said is for probably every team that played at UCLA under Lav and all that, at least one team or two teams twice, we pretty much underachieved. We didn't live up to our potential as a team, as players. What do you attribute those lapses to back at UCLA? I've always tried to figure that out because we would have so much talent, man. And in the summer times, you probably ran against the pros with the UCLA crew, and y'all probably was getting a lot of wins and looking great. What was it, man? What happens? What happened at UCLA as far as the underachieving part?
That's a good question, man. It's I think it comes down to just building teams and everybody staying there. And, you know, you got guys just leaving year after year, new guys coming in. That it's hard to build that camaraderie and that grit, that winning mentality. So I think that's a kind of where it hurt when I was playing. I played with two coaches, so it was Lav for 2 years and then Ben Holland for 2 years. The next 2 years, so that coaching change could be a monkey wrench in itself, just because it's just new, it's different. Two coaching styles, Ben Holland coming from the East Coast and Coach Lav more West Coast style and more free oriented. So that was just a little different. It just kind of just throws you off your you know, what you're used to and what you've seen for the first 2 years. So I could say that. I mean, it's just keeping the team together, building a team, a good group of guys that's going to stay together for the, you know, for 4 years, 3 years, or however long it takes.
Yeah, man. Building a program, building a culture, it takes time. It takes guys sticking around. Like, we had guys that stayed all 4 years back then. So, you know, it was Ed and Tyus and George Zedek. Those were our guys. Those were our seniors.
And what happened?
Yeah, we won one. We won one. And there was no doubt with the talent you guys had, because coming. So, wait, you weren't there for Moiso and Dan, were you?
I was there for Dan, not Moiso. So, okay. I had Matt Capone.
Yeah.
Billy, rest in peace, Billy.
Rest in peace.
I had a lot of older guys there.
That's a monster team.
Yeah. We had a good team. We lost in Sweet 16 that year.
Yeah. Was UCLA everything you thought it was going to be?
I don't know what it was going to be. You know, I was so green with the basketball. Like, I was learning on the fly. Like, I didn't really have that I guess experience or supportive experience, you know, that could just be like, oh, okay, look out for this, look out for that. I'll learn on the fly. So I didn't know what to expect. It was fun. Like, I enjoyed every minute of it. I enjoyed it. If I had to go back and change school, I wouldn't. I'd still choose UCLA.
Yeah, I would too. I had a few schools that were, you know, knocking down my door. Washington State with Kelvin Sampson, Arizona State with Bill Frieder, Cornell out in the Ivy League. But, you know, I'm glad I went to UCLA, but I kind of wonder what my life would have been like had I went to like a Utah and played for Rick Majerus and had the rock in my hand, and, you know, not running, you know, the UCLA high post and where you could kind of develop a little more and handle and things like that. I always think about it, but, you know, not really tripping on it. You know, hindsight is always 20/20. If you were all Pac-10 your last year at UCLA, and now take me through the draft process. So you're coming, you're projected, well, I don't know where they had you, but I know that at your size, your height, your skill set at that time, you seem pretty primed to, you know, to do well in the draft. Now you get picked 54th, second round. How, take me through the workout process for you, the pre-draft process, if you can remember, and talk about the moment that your name got called 54th.
I always tell people that was probably like that whole process was, I hated that process. Like I hated that whole process.
Why?
It's, I don't know that my nature, my style of play and going out, workout after workout, having to like prove yourself. Yeah, I could do it, but that wasn't my thing. I'm more of a gamer. Like I like to show my game through just gameplay. So that you having to fight every trip, every workout. I was like, damn, these guys is hungry. But I think we kind of threw it off a little bit. My senior year, I played the four position. That's just where we needed to. I needed to be for the team to thrive. Or that was the only position that was open that needed filling. So I played. It was a stretch four. So going into the draft and that pre-draft process, like I was going against a lot of fours in my work. And I'm just like, it's not my position. But, you know, I was able to do it and it was successful at a little bit. But these guys are a little bit heavier than me, you know.
Jeez.
I'm going against like Ryan Gomes is like 20 pounds, 25 pounds more heavy than me, 30 pounds. Jason Maxill, I'm like, these guys.
Jason Maxill?
Like, these guys is on the block. I can't do nothing with this, man. These guys are physical.
Wait, who was
that time? The game was more physical. It was.
Who was your agent, D? Who's your agent, real quick? Who's your agent?
At that time, I was. I had signed with Todd. I was with Todd.
Okay.
It was his first go around with the Life Sports agency. So, the year before that, Trevor had went to the draft. He had Trevor, and then I was going to go to the draft my junior year. So we both, me and Trevor, went to pre-draft together. Trevor stayed in. I went back to school.
Wait.
I went through my whole senior year, had a better senior year, which I was like, yeah, you go ahead, Trev. Like, you do your thing.
That's good.
It worked out for him. But yeah, I ended up going back to school and doing the pre-draft thing. But Todd was my agent when I signed out.
I guess I was supposed to have Todd on last week. I guess I'll ask him when he gets on. I'm asking why the hell he sent you to pre-draft workouts with fours and didn't have no goddamn shooting guard workouts. That's for another discussion. I'm going to ask Todd on my own because I want to get to the bottom of that because that don't make no damn sense. But Dijon, it's so funny how we have a lot of parallels. So you just talked about your pre-draft experiences and playing the four, right? The stretch four. So my whole senior year, bro, I played the stretch four and I'm not tall as you. So I'm bigger, but I'm not as tall as you. I'm 6'5" playing the stretch four. And then when I get to the pro situation in Arizona and Chicago and all that, they put me in with the twos. So I would have rather have been in with the fours, yeah. But they put my big slow. I was 240, 6'5", 240. I'm trying to stay in front of, you know, Earl Boykins and them. And all, I mean, it wasn't, hey, Anthony Carter, you don't remember AC Anthony Carter? Please, he's coming, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm just trying to guard. And you know how it is when you play a position for an extended period of time at a very high level, like a four, when you try to translate that skill set that you have been used to playing into the NBA, into the pro setting where guys have been playing their natural positions and this and that, you're going to always be at a disadvantage. I'm really, actually the fact that you got drafted after working out against fours, it really says a lot about probably how you stuck out and how you showed up in those workouts.
Yeah, I definitely did the best thing I could in those workouts. My trainer, you know, Rico Hines, he definitely prepares you. Those type of workouts are pro workouts. And that was, what, 10, 15 years ago. You know, people are just now starting to see Rico now, but he was doing that 10, 20 years ago, the workouts. And it was probably harder then. Like, he's probably lightened up now because he can't move as much and is, you know, getting older like we all. But they were tough. They prepared me. I was definitely prepared in all the workouts. It just the way the game was, the way the game evolves now, I think if I was playing now, it'd be a little bit better for me. The stretch four is not really a stretch four. It's, it's no the best players out there.
Yeah, you'd be a three and D guy, you know, they'd say, or I mean, if you, I mean, it's a lot of guys in, that are playing and flourishing in the NBA right now that I could see somebody with your skill set, because you have the skill set of that, that's the most valuable. We do, both do, the that jumper, that pro deep ass jumper. Okay, hey, that jumper, put me in a game right now with my jumper. All right, I'm pulling like these motherfuckers is pulling. Yeah. Everybody pulling, D. Hey, it's all good to pull from deep now. Remember, remember we had to be hesitant because we could always shoot from there, but then you had to get a look if we pulled up, people looking at you, mad at you. It's a, I try to tell folks, man, it's a totally different game now. Different. It is not just because of what guys can do or where they can shoot. It's the attitude towards a 5-7 dribble combo, a dude just playing ISO ball. It's the attitudes by the coach and the other teammates that has changed the most, in my opinion. Think about how we let everybody get this off now. Remember, you made some of these shots, bro, I'd be wanting to fight. I would have been wanting to fight Dijon. Like, man, what you doing, dog? Where you shooting at?
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, good shot, bro. Good shot.
Yeah. Yeah, but, it's different.
Let me ask you this, though, and be 100% honest. Being a second round pick by the Knicks, number 54, were you satisfied? Were you happy with that? Or were you like disappointed that you spent a large portion of your life probably wanting to be a first rounder? Now you get drafted in the second round. What were your emotions like?
I remember it was like it was yesterday. It was sitting in Todd's office. Family was there. It was stressful. It was just like, damn, you know, it's like everybody's draft experience. You know, you saying you about to get drafted here, that pick pass, you like, all right, the next couple of picks. And you start going down the list and the opportunities, the window starts closing. But once I heard that name, it was like a big relief. Ooh, wee. It was like, yeah. You know, even though it's 54, I was like, yeah. It was a great feeling, honestly. It was a great feeling. And it was just like, it's time to get to work. You know, it's time to get to work. It was a chip on my shoulder. But I was happy. I was happy to get drafted. One out of 60 players in the world to get drafted, man. And I tell myself now, just like, one out of 60, man. To have your name called, so.
Bruh, make no mistake. That is amazing. That is an amazing accomplishment to be drafted, to have your name on the board for an organization to believe in you enough to invest a draft pick in you, okay? Because I didn't get drafted. And I'm sitting on the board. I'm sitting watching the thing. And you watch the whole thing. My stomach hurting. You know, the tears is flowing. It's like, dang. So everybody that comes on here that has been drafted or anything like that, I always talk about this because I love hearing it. I love hearing people's perspective on whether or not they were – some people were, you know, weren't happy with their second round pick. Like, you know, Toby wasn't too happy with that. Hey, dog, I should have went first round. You know, I should have bounced after my freshman year. So we get into all that type of conversations. So it's good to hear that you are rolling with the 54 pick because I know that we were. What do you remember? What stands out the most about your first NBA training camp as a rookie? Oh,
God. So I got drafted by New York, but I was traded to Phoenix. So my first year was in Phoenix. And training camp was at Tucson. It was at U of A. So I was like, all right, cool. I know this arena. I didn't play here 4 years. So I know the baskets. I can, you know, I'm cool. Yeah. But that Phoenix system, man, with Steve Nash, that 8 seconds, 7 seconds or less, you get in that, you like, God, they are flying up and down this court. Like, it was hard to adjust. It was really hard to adjust to really get in that mode to just throw up anything up there on that, just throw up a shot, just get it up. And that wasn't my style of game. Like, in your mind, you like, anybody wants to play in that style, but that's not for everybody. Everybody don't have that mindset. Everybody don't have that conscience. So it was difficult for me. You know, it was times where it was just like, yeah, I could hang, I could ball. I had moments where it's like I stood out, but it was tough. It was tough to really crack that D'Antoni lineup. And that was gut wrenching, you know, to get to experience that. They sent me down to the D League. My rookie year, and I was like, "Damn, Already.
And so, and let me just break this down. So how many games into the season before D'Antoni and them sent you down to the G League?
It wasn't
off top. It was off top.
It was, yeah, it might have been kind of more so off top because the D League was starting to get developed then. It was, they were still trying to, you know, get that implemented and acclimated. So it was, they were still testing it out. So they needed players. So it was like perfect. Boom, send them down there. So it wasn't long. It was, so it was after training camp and then had to do a D League training camp. I was like, oh, I just came from training camp. I got to do another one. So this is where Coach Cooper, Michael Cooper, he was my coach at the time.
Okay.
I love Coop. And he was like, DT, he's like, I know you just did training camp. He's like, I ain't going to kill you like that, man. He's like, you got to do some stuff, but I ain't going to kill you like that.
That's
so
real.
I was like, cool. So he looked out for me. And that was, I loved it down there, man. I played probably about two or three games max, killed him, and they called me right back up. And I was like, yes, I'm gonna play. Like, yes, nah, I'm gonna sit right back on this bench. I was like, let me go back down to Albuquerque. Like, it was fun down there. We had Tony Bland. I had Joe Shipp. Cedric came down and played. Like, I had my L.A. guys down there with me. So, it was fun for me.
Yeah.
And we was winning. Coach Cooper, I loved it.
That's dope. So, when you go down to the G League, you hoop, you come back up, Phoenix. Why they called you back up because somebody got hurt and they needed a roster spot to fill, or they wanted you to come in and actually play? And you did you get another opportunity to play is what I want to get at.
No, I didn't get the opportunity to play. I think somebody was sick. Barbosa may have got sick or a cold or something. So they needed an extra body up there. But I really thought I was about to play now because I had proved myself in the D-League. I could put up some numbers. So, but yeah, it just didn't happen that way. Just didn't happen that way. And then probably about February, March, I ended up having knee surgery. I had microfracture in my rookie season. That was a gut punch. That same year, Amari Stoudemire had his microfracture. So he had his right out of training camp. So I was watching him, seeing him go through his rehab all year. And then once the doctor said I had one, I was like, oh, no. Amari just signed his $100 million contract. I'm still sitting on this rookie. I'm like, oh, this ain't a good look for me. This ain't a good look. But I was like, nah, I can't go out like that. I had to rehab, get better, and came back. I came back full strength. So
good.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At what point, though, did you decide in your head, like, I'm tired of chasing this league stuff? And because as ball players that are elite and you have an actual opportunity to try out for the NBA, and if you can do it year after year, because I did it like 4 or 5 straight years where I was going to training camps and all that. At some point, I was like, man, fuck all that shit. I'm done. I'm tired of this. You know what I'm saying? I'm just tired of being a body in training camp, tired of not getting a real look, even though I'm killing these dudes in training camp. I'm tired of this feeling. I'm going to go somewhere where I'm loved, where they, you know, Chris Johnson, where they, you know, they say your name real loud. At what point did that realization happen for you, Dijon?
I think it was... can't remember. I was coming back from my knee injury. I got a call up, came back to Phoenix, rehabbed the whole year, started the D League, got called up to Atlanta Hawks, played there for two 10-day contracts. The numbers game happened. So I go back, finish the rest of the season in the D League. That following summer, I think I have a training camp with the Cleveland Cavaliers. I go into that training camp, the mini training camp, play really, really well, and end up making the roster for Vegas, whatever. I was probably the third guy on that team. You had you got Daniel Gibson on that team, and Shannon, I'm blanking on his last name, but they were two rookies. They were two rookies at the time, so they were summer leaguers for the rookies. You know, the guys that didn't really get to play, and they was coming to their sophomore season, so the time was for them, and I was probably that third guy outside of them as far as on the floor and as far as touches and getting notoriety. But hey, they took all the shots. So I was like, cool, I got to figure it out. But still played well within the minutes. So after that, they like, I come to training camp basically for no money. That's when I was like, you know what? Nah, I got to make a business decision. My agent at the time, Sam Goldfeder, he was just like, man, this is a business, man. Let's just go get some money. How about that? I was like, you know what? You're right. Let's go get some money overseas, man. So that was my once I played well in summer league and you know they didn't even want to give me no money to come to training camp. That's when I was like, all right, nah, that's not right.
Yeah, that hurts, man. It hurts, and it shows you, Joe, how they treat you, man. If you're not one of them guys, you know, you're not one of their guys. And look. It's all up to them. I don't hate the NBA. I don't hate the people that made the scouting decisions that they made or the choices they made. But, you know, you look back on it, you just kind of sometimes you think, I wonder if you think sometimes like, man, I wish I just had one more shot or I wish I had a real legitimate chance to play where I was getting shots or if I actually got time and my numbers caught. You see it in the league today, man. Some of these guys, like the Clippers, they got a guy named Amir Coffey. I don't know if you've seen Amir Coffey play. This dude had 35, 37, dog. Like he just needed some minutes. Do you feel like you was one of them guys?
Yeah.
That just you. Yeah.
It's minutes, it's opportunity, it's timing. I mean, it's a lot of variables come into it, but – yeah, I do believe I was talented enough to be on the floor and get major minutes, of course. I think I was that skilled enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. You got to be that skilled. And talk about now your first real overseas experience. So Sam tells you, hey, let's go get some money. What was the first job that he brought to your table? And just talk about that country, that city, that team.
First job was in Germany, Berlin. So the city was amazing. It wasn't the most warming experience. I mean, first time overseas, you just like, you know, hear the lights. You just like a deer in the headlights. Like, what the hell? The ambulance is different. First time I'm experienced jet lag. I'm like, what? You got to wake up in like 2 hours to do a physical where they're going to have you running on the treadmill. So I remember calling my mom. I'm like, I ain't about to make it. At this time, you got Skype you had to get calling cards. So I remember buying like a pack of calling cards, T-Mobile calling cards right before I left from my homie. Cause I was like, man, I'm gonna need all kind of
money. That was the lick. That was the lick.
So the homie had the calling card. I spent like $50. Like, give me $50. So I had calling cards, dialed them in. I remember calling my mom, like, I ain't gonna make it. Like, I'm tired. I can't even go to sleep. I gotta get up and run. Like, I ain't gonna pass. She like, ah, you be all right, you know, just try to go to sleep, you know, calm me down. But played in Germany, Berlin, before a Serbian coach out the gate. I'm like,
man, so I had a Serbian too, bro.
I got baptized out the gate. So it was tough. It was tough on the basketball side. The city kind of saved me as far as, you know, entertainment, you know, just stuff to disconnect from basketball because the narrative for a Serbian coach, they could take the fun out of basketball, man. They're gonna drill you, run you, and it's very militant, you know. So it was Berlin, the city saved me.
Yeah. Speaking that, and that's fascinating because I played for a Serbian coach when I was in Lebanon. And he was a little psychotic, you know what I mean? Like he was on one. He used to tell me because he had coached Daryl Armstrong in Greece. Remember Daryl Armstrong? He was trying to get me to play like Daryl Armstrong. I'm like, dog, I can't play like Daryl Armstrong, man. That's a whole nother type of dude. I'm gonna do me, bro. This turnaround jumper and this mid post. Like, I'm gonna do me. So he was, but the thing he loved about me, because you know, I had a crazy work ethic. So I was there. Yeah. I was getting to the gym like at 6, like before the 9 o'clock morning practice. I was already like an hour and a half, 2 hours sweaty. I would stay in the whole facility all day. So he was rolling. He knew what time it was with me. So I was like, bro, I'm gonna give you this 50 ball. Like, don't even talk to me about none of this, nothing. Okay. I don't want to hear nothing. Hey, D, you know how, Dijon, when you go overseas and you ball out and you know you have that thing that they love, yeah, you can call your own shots, bro.
Yeah. I've been on both sides of the spectrum, man. You can be the man and, you know, call your shots and be the last guy on the bench. So it was a great career, man. I loved it. Like you said, a Serbian coach, he killed us, but he actually primed me for the rest of my career, to be honest. Like that mental toughness and knew it takes that grind. Like I it was no surprises after that. Like, I knew what to expect from every team, and I that's how I just performed after that. It was just like straight, like like, nah, I ain't messing around. Like, he, so I give it to him. He helped him. He helped me.
I saw you had achieved or been honored with like all Euro Cup selections overseas. Did you guys won a champ? You won championships over there?
One year in Ukraine. Shout out to Ukraine. I did win a championship in Ukraine in Mariupol. So my blessings go out to them. That was the only place I really won like a championship in the cup and stuff. For the Euro Cup, we made it to the Final Four. We really just had a really good team, underdog team, and really made it to the Final Four against some really, really top teams. So that was a really good year for me, actually. Yeah.
What's the country of Ukraine? What is it like out there? How are the people? What was, you know, just describe it or talk about it a little bit.
I mean, be honest, is what you see on TV. Ukraine hasn't really changed from when I was playing. It's very underdeveloped. The money, they don't really put money back into the city. It's very poor. I remember playing that the closest McDonald's to me was like an hour away, and I was looking for that McDonald's. Like, we looking for McDonald's overseas, and it's crazy to say, but we are thirsty for McDonald's overseas as a solid meal, like, because we know what to expect. So an hour away, and we would have to fly out of that airport. So I just remember loading up on apple pies on the bus, like, I'm going back to my city an hour away, cheeseburger, so I could eat them a little bit later. Like, but yeah, Ukraine, it was cool. Like, we won the chip. The culture was there. Loved it. It was just, the city was just crazy.
Yeah, man, that's how my experience in Russia was. Yeah. So I was in Moscow for a little bit, and then I was in Saratov, which is like near Siberia. It's like way in the cut. Like you say, I was there in 1999, so the economy had collapsed, like the ruble wasn't worth nothing. Yeah. And so people was out there just really hungry, thirsty. You know, they were trying to get me to throw a game to throw the game. The Russian, old school Russian, come talk to you on the side.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Hey, they was trying to get you to throw the game. I'm like, oh, dog. I was like, man, I can't do all that. I'm trying to hoop, bro. Like, I don't even get down with the throw the game.
That's crazy, yeah.
Like, you know, but anyway, that it was crazy experience. I'll never forget, though, Russia. I went to these nightclubs out there. And I'll never forget this scene, bro. I'm walking in behind like two big ass, like Serbian, Bosnian looking dudes, right? And so they just start pulling out heaters, and they had like a little cubicle where they were checking in. They gave the dudes a ticket. They checked in the gets, like before they got to the club. Okay, here, I'm gonna set it here. They checked it in and they got a ticket for the, I was like, oh, okay, it's one of them. I get inside the club and it's nothing but Tupac being bumped for 2 hours. Two straight hours of Pac, stuff I'd never heard. I couldn't believe I was over. I was just like, what the hell's going on? They were serving steak. I got a big ass steak in this spot.
Yeah.
Needless to say, I had a pretty solid experience in Russia. 13 years overseas, right?
Yeah.
Dang, dog. I mean, the way I think about longevity overseas, I feel like, and tell me if you feel like this, I feel like when you're gone that long, typically it's what, seven months on, 4 or 5 months back at the house. When you're gone that long, you miss out on a lot of things. Do you feel like over those 13 years, when you came back after you retired, do you feel like, has it been an easy transition to come back to the States and to sort of the real world after being a pro internationally for 13 years?
No, it's never easy. It doesn't matter where you are. Transition is never easy for nobody. You know, you used to doing something for 13 plus years, 10 plus years, however long somebody plays, it's never easy. So being over there that long, I missed out on a lot of things. One of my close friends, he would always say, just press play. When you get back, just press play, man. We missing out on stuff, but we not. We over there working. We doing what we love to do. But so We didn't really miss out on a lot, but you miss out on connections, you miss out on network, missing out on, you know, just that feel, that texture, just that engagement. So it's when you stop, you got to reconnect all over again. Like, you know, now you got social media. You didn't have social media that, you know, so it's hard to keep up with folks. And I don't really have that much social media. So it's really hard to keep up with me as well. But transition's hard. It's hard. But, you know, that's why you go to UCLA for the network and got guys like you that I could call big brothers, you know, Baron, everybody that's been down that journey and kind of guides you, just be that lighthouse, Ray Young, you know. So a lot of guys have helped, you know, it's not easy, but everybody goes through it.
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, it's good to talk about it with other people that have gone through it too. I felt like when my time overseas, like I missed out on a lot. When I say missed out, I mean, obviously you talk about the family and kids and things like that are close to you. But I was talking more about like professionally. It's like you spent 8 years hooping, so you're equipped to come back home and do something in the field of basketball. Now, the jobs that pay in the field of basketball, typically in the college and the pro realm, those jobs are far and few between. There are not a lot of those jobs. Those jobs are already kind of spoken for and plugs and hookups and, you know, nepotism and the whole nine. So being overseas for 8 years and then coming back and then trying to, you know, find your way into the coaching industry or the television game or these different games where people have been grinding while you were gone overseas 8 years, you're sort of behind the eight ball. You have they got a head start on you. And so now you got to bone up real quick. You got to get up to speed real quick. I think it's necessary for guys that play internationally overseas that when they come back, they have to get some type of certification. So like whether it be real estate, whether it be an accounting license, whether it be something, you got to be able to get into the game with some type of certification that puts you on a level where somebody feel comfortable hiring you, or you can make your own bread legally and do it in a way like real estate, you know what I'm saying? Where you're your own boss. Yep. It's a tough game, bro. It's a tough game, dog. We as men, you just got to keep stepping up. You just got to keep waking up every day, man, and trying to go get it. No matter how old you get, shit, I'm almost 50, bro. So, you know, I met you when we was young and, you know, I was way more handsome. You still handsome and shit. Yeah. I was way more handsome. But, yo, that's facts, bro.
No, that's real, man. It's just being an athlete. I mean, it's funny you say that we behind the eight ball and a lot of things, but we not in a way because we have characteristics that a lot of people don't have, and that's that grit. Going overseas, you got to have grit. You got to have discipline. You got to be patient, resilient. That ain't for everybody. So to be able to survive overseas and come back, like, yeah, the transition is hard, but we, like I said in the beginning, we built for it. We built for it. We're not going to stop. We're competitive. You're going to tell us no. We're going to figure out another way how to figure it out. You know what I mean? So, yeah, we missed out on some things, but we have a lot of other traits that a lot of people don't have either.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that we give ourselves those props. We recognize those traits. You know, that's why brotherhood and things like that are so important, man, just to be able to talk to cats that went through the same experience as you and to have sources of inspiration and motivation, you know, because our motivation ain't going to be the same like as everybody else's. Like, you know, so we got only certain type of dudes can motivate us. Like, we got to hear from, only certain type of dude. Like, look, I ain't trying to listen to all this motivation. I'm one of these dudes that motivate. I need somebody way up here motivating me, bro. Yeah, and that's just how it is, dog. Let me ask you this. When's the last time you've been in the gym, man, and hooped?
I was in the gym Saturday, matter of fact, this past Saturday, man.
You was hooping? You coaching?
But I mean, to answer the real question, man, I'm not in the gym like that, honestly, man. I'm not. I'm trying to pick it up here and there so I don't get all stiff and stuff. But, yeah.
You never thought about working with anybody, man, working with some of these youngsters, man, on their jumper and game? I mean, you would be – first of all, from a demonstration standpoint, just seeing you shoot around and stuff. I'm listening, dog. I'm watching you, Dijon shoot. I'm listening, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I ain't never really looking for it. But I mean, if somebody ask and, you know, approach me with it, yeah, I'm always open to helping you for sure.
That's dope. That's dope, sure. Man. That's dope, man. Well, that's a good place to be in, man. I still try to get help out when I can, bro. You know what I'm saying? Help out when I can. Well, man, listen, it's been a great conversation, brother. I appreciate you for coming on the platform and sharing your story, sharing your basketball journey with us, man. You got any shout outs?
Man, I don't do the shout out thing. Shout out to everybody, man. The UCLA community, everybody, my startup, everybody. Just love.
What's up with your startup? What's up with your startup, bro? Don't we try to get that in? Don't we try to sneak that in? What's up with the startup?
I don't try to sneak it in. I mean, yeah, this is the reason why I'm not really, you know, doing the basketball or in the gym like that. It's the transition into startup into the tech space, just dealing with data, you know, biometric data. So it's, that's more of a challenge. I like the challenge. So startup life is collaborative. It's still team oriented. And yeah, it's pretty cool, man. It's
Dope, man. Dope. I lived that life for about 7 years, from 2011 to about 2018. I was with a company up by Sausalito, California, right outside of San Francisco. This dude, he designed this app that made it easy to scout. Right. So we were collecting data with the iPhone. We got we got a server in the cloud. We shoot it up
there
to.
We go.
Hey, we slang it up.
Yeah, we're talking my language. Hey, here we go.
Hey, so no, man, if you ever want to chop it up about any of that experience or whatever, man, my phone is always open to you, brother. Again, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Dejon Thompson.
Appreciate it, y'all.
Peace.